I'd like to take this time to introduce Dawn. Dawn, are you there? Can you unmute?
Am I unmuted?
You sure are, yes.
Okay.
Great to see you, Dawn. Thank you.
Okay. Can you see me? Did I block myself?
So we can't see you, but I think we can send you a little...
Wait a minute.
Billy, can you... Okay.
I can't hit wait a minute. That's what happens when you're 89, you know, you just kind of miss the mark. I can't make myself so you can see me. Can you do
okay.
that?
Okay. So I'm wondering if Billy can send you a message to ask you to turn your camera on, I wonder?
Okay, I'm trying to turn it on, but I hit it and it doesn't come on.
Aw.
I just put start video.
Yeah, I've sent it. She should be able to click it.
We can hear you, but we just can't see you, Dawn.
Well, that's okay. You can't see me. This might be better. When you're 89, you're not really at your best. I'll tell you that. I'm grateful. Thank you, Bill, for calling me and asking me to share the good news of recovery. And I always think of it as the good news of recovery, because I've been on this journey now since I was 26 and I'm 89 now, so you know that's a long time. It's interesting, you would think by now that I could say I got it all and I'm gonna graduate next week, but I find that I need this program more now than I've ever needed it, because every day's a new experience to trudge the road of a happy destiny. And that's what I'm doing. Trudge the road of happy destiny. But it is, I like the word trudge, because you can, as Rick was talking about, you can, I feel that trudging, you know? And as I use a walker now, sometimes, yeah, you're trudging, honey. You're trudging. But I like the fact that in the book it says happy destiny, that all of it has there's a purpose in this journey. And the purpose in this journey says that there's going to be joy at the other end. You know, life is what it is. I grew up on movies, and I thought that everything would end up in a nice little bowl, and I would marry the guy who would adore me for the rest of my life. My children would be perfect. They would be stars in some galaxy somewhere. And life didn't turn out that way. But here's the good news. I do not regret the past, nor do I wish to close the door on it, because all of the experiences I have had in my life have helped me grow spiritually and have helped me have a relationship with the God of my understanding that lets me know on an in-depth level every day of my life that I am loved and have been loved in just the way God wanted me to love, so that I could become a servant and a child of God. And that's good news for all of us, you know. My husband has been dead now for 20 years, and I miss him daily, you know. But I have so many great memories, because we walked this journey together in years of sobriety. Was his sobriety as I would like it have been? No. He had moments when he actually slipped, and I covered for him. I shouldn't have done that. I was in Al-Anon. I knew better than that, but I let him tell his story. And what I did see in his moments of failure in the program were moments of growth in the program, because each time he became just a little clearer that he needed God desperately And his ego would get in the way and he'd think he could do it. And he'd come back and say, no, I need God. I can't do this. Deflation of ego death. But what it did to me was make me understand what I had to do was not try to fix him or change him or make him have a perfect program. I had to look in the mirror and say, who's the problem here? What is your problem? You think you have the ability to straighten somebody's life out when you cannot straighten your own. Why did you end up marrying an alcoholic? I married an alcoholic because my self-esteem was so low that I wanted somebody in my life whose life was worse than mine so I could fix them. And that's how I was going to get my crown. And what I found out coming into these rooms was that I was the broken one. That I was looking outside trying to fix a broken person. And what I had to do was take these steps and realize that the possibility for growth and change had to happen on the inside. And I had to once again surrender on a daily basis that there's something wrong with this individual. But the hope I got in these rooms when it said that there was a power that could restore me to sanity. It didn't say restore Peter to sanity. It didn't say restore the children to sanity. It said could restore me to sanity. But the only way it could do that is if I was willing to get under new direction. And I had to be willing to let go and let God. And I had to get willing to understand that the only way I could do it was to do those steps in my life so that God could actually stir away and look away and take the veils off my eyes so I could see what the journey had been and know that the God of my understanding loved me enough that he could let me see Dawn in her brokenness. And what I also saw that my husband used to say, you know, Dawn, you're not that good at being bad. But I grew up in a parsonage and I grew up with preachers. I grew up with the condemning God if you weren't perfect. I knew I couldn't live up to the Ten Commandments. I knew I couldn't do that, so I didn't feel clean. I felt dirty, and I had to understand that the God of my understanding wanted to let me see me as I was. I had been sexually abused as a child. That had a child out of wedlock and in a parsonage and in the family I was in, that's not supposed to happen. And had the child taken away from me. I'd given birth to children who were brilliant, sweet baby children. And I was so insistent that they be perfect that I almost broke them. I had a daughter who told me she was gay and I turned her out of my house. Because I was a Bible-believing human being that you can't be gay in my house. And God broke me and said, if you can't accept your daughter as she is, you need to look at yourself. I was so afraid of life on life's terms that I couldn't deal with the reality of what was. But I changed because I came into this program. I worked those steps. I let God look at me. I couldn't change anybody, but something happened in the midst of working those steps, and in particular, working the sixth and seventh step. When I looked at, I thought the problem was me, was that I had dysfunctional people in my life. The problem with me was I was dysfunctional. The problem with me was I had so many resentments and anger and fear. I had so many character defects that they blocked my relationship with God. And it wasn't until I got to those sixth and seventh steps that I saw on an in-depth level that I had to be changed, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I couldn't change. I wanted to be a nice person. My husband used to say, is that all you want to be? And I said, you should be happy, because if I'm a nice person, I'll be easier to live with. But I couldn't do anything about it. But I got to that sixth and seventh step, and I cried out to God, please, God, I don't know how to change me, but I trust you that you can do something with me that I am incapable of doing. And I'm willing to clear away the wreckage of the past. I'm willing to make amends. I'm willing to become the person you want me to be. I'm willing to let go of the angers and the jealousy. I'm willing to let them go, God, but I don't know how. And he said, can't you just surrender? Can't you just surrender? That's really all he's calling us to do. He's calling us to turn our will and our life, our choices, our anger, our fear, and all those things that block the relationship with God so that I can feel the sunshine of his grace. That's what it's about. I'm living now at 89 by myself. I use a walker. I can't go out. I couldn't go out before the pandemic. But you know what? This lovely woman named Yvonne called me and said, Dawn, are you still speaking? And I wasn't talking anymore. I couldn't get to meetings. I get on phone meetings, but I couldn't really go travel or any of that because I don't have the strength to do that anymore. But for some reason, instead of saying, no, I can't talk anymore, I'm old, the thought came to me, but you got a lot of wisdom that you got because you sat around tables for 60 something years. And maybe God wants you to talk a little bit. Maybe he wants you to get out of yourself, because if you don't do that, and if you don't give away what you received, you're going to slip slowly back to where you were. And so I got up and said, yes, I can talk. I just want to tell the story a little bit, but I want to tell more than the story. I want to tell the hope of how we can make it on a daily basis if we give our lives to God. And not like I did in church, because the God I've received in these rooms says that we are all equal and that I don't have to work for salvation. It's a gift that's been given me because I've worked the steps and allowed myself to change and allowed to be able to see people in the way God sees them, with tenderness and love and forgiveness, just like I want to be saved, like I want to be seen. My son was the first one that left us. He told us he was gay. And because I'd had the experience with Lisa, my oldest child, I was able to just put my arms around David and watch him come into a fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. I was able to watch him get sober. And he said to me one day, Mama, you know, I have AIDS. And I could, because of this program, I could just say, God, I'm going to walk with David through this journey. And we went to an international together, my son, my daughter, Lisa, who was also sober, and her partner, my husband. And we met my oldest middle diet child at the convention. And we all celebrated the marvel of this program as we trudged the road of happy destiny. In 1998, I sat by his bed and I was listening to Rick talk about acceptance. I sat next to David's bed and he said, Mama, if God loves me, he's not going to leave me in this kind of pain. He said, Mama, they want to increase the morphine tonight. The doctor said, if they do, I'm going to go. And I could take David by the hand and say, honey, it's been a journey. And I thank you for being my son. And I sat there and my daughter sang, there is a balm in Gilead that heals the wounded soul. And I said, it's okay to go, David. See, I could accept the fact that God loved David more than I did, because God wasn't going to leave David in that kind of pain. He just wasn't going to do that. And what I had to do, because I had this program and the tools of this program, I had to be willing to understand there comes a time in life when we let go and let God. Not just in the ordinary things in life, but sometimes the deeper things in life, the things that have to do with life and death. And as an Al-Anon person, I want to fix you. I don't want to let you go. And I had to take David's hand and hold it as he took his last breath. The good news is that I know that I will see David again, because I work a program that says to me, life is not over. And I know that David's at the big meeting in the sky. You know, 20 years ago, Peter's emphysema increased. He never was able to really stop smoking. He till about 3 years before he died. And it got worse. And his breathing was awful. His pain was awful. But he was in good spiritual condition. We would sit in his room and we would talk about the program. We talk about our journey. We talk about going on speaking at meetings. We talk about carrying the message. We talk about how we couldn't stand one another at some points in our life. We talk about the brokenness in this relationship. We talk about sometimes we would say every once in a while, we've never divorced, but we did married in that house. Sometimes it was a war going on. And then we'd reach the point where there was total peace, you know? And I remember one day when it dawned upon me, I was sitting in Peter's room, in our room, and I said, honey, you're really leaving me. And all at once, all the pain of the years fell on me and I just began to weep. And Peter said, Dawn, pull yourself together. I am trying to die. Go talk to your sponsor. And so I got up and left, went talk to my sponsor, got on my knees, and she said, let him go. Let him go, it's gonna be okay. I sat by Peter's bed and we were in hospice and we got to the door of hospice and Peter said, Dawn, look over there in the corner. I said, what is it, honey? He said, there's David, he's come to get me. I knew the end was coming. God is good, you know? This program has helped me deal with things in life that I don't want to deal with. I don't want to be the first one or the last one here, but God has his own message, his own time. And all I know is he prepared me with the tools of this program and how to live life on life's terms. And I could hold Peter's hand and we could say to one another, I'll see you on the other side. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. What would have happened to me had I not married that alcoholic? Lord knows, I was nutty as a fruitcake. But marrying him gave me not only a purpose in life, but it gave me an inner joy and a peace. And it gave me a road to follow. It gave me tools so I could use on a daily basis and deal with life on life's terms. That's what we get in these rooms. God softens us. He gives us strength, but he softens us. He gives us strength when we need it, but he gives us peace. And he gives us hope in the midst of shadows. 2 years ago, my Lisa. Lisa's the one that I said not in my house. Lisa, who pulled herself up and went to Alcoholics Anonymous. And my husband used to say, if she doesn't go back to college, she'll never make anything of her life. She ended up as a vice president, one of your major corporations. She had 30 years of sobriety. She had 40 years of sobriety. She got sober in 1980. She had an aneurysm, a brain aneurysm. And I talked to God. I said, now, God, I know you're going to take me next. You cannot take any more children. You can't take them. I just cannot handle losing another child. Well, God has his own plan. God gives me peace and his mercy, but his plan is his plan. My job is, as Rick talked about, was being willing to accept life on life's terms. And sometimes death on death's terms. I went into Washington to be with my daughter. I'd never seen anybody like that. They had kept her on her stomach too long while they tried to reach the aneurysm in her brain. And when she came out, her tongue stuck out of her mouth like that. And she couldn't open, she couldn't speak. They had tubes all over. And for 2 months, she was in total misery. And I remember laying hands on her thinking I had some power. God, please take me and leave my daughter. I'm old. I've worked my life. I'm through. She's still young. She's got things to do. And God said, be quiet, Dawn. I'm in charge here. I'm in charge here. People rallied to my side. My sponsees came. Women who I've loved better than I've loved my daughters, who understood me and loved me anyhow. And while I sponsored them, they saw in me my flaws and loved me anyway. But they stood with me. People cooked food for me. People came and stood with me in that hospital. Her staff was like a family to me. They took care of my daughter, my other daughter, and myself. And we watched as God took Lisa home. My daughter and I have left. My daughter, who's the middle child, she says I suffered from middle child syndrome. It's the hardest child for me to love because she was just like me. Just like me. Without a program. And her negative stuff came up a lot after Lisa's death. And I didn't know how to work it. I didn't know how to handle it. I didn't know how to make her loving again. I didn't know how to close the pain that was between the two of us. And my sponsor said, just work your program. Just love her. She's in grief and she's in pain. She's lost her sister. And she doesn't know what to do. So she's striking out at all those who are closest to her. So my job was to stay spiritually fit and work my program. My stuff was to say, what is your part in this? What is your part? She's always felt a little on the outside because she was the middle child. And God had to force me to grow again and again. That's what he does as we trudge the road. Sometimes it seems happy, but sometimes it's a painful destiny. But the good news is that we trudge it and we get to the other side. Now my daughter and I are back talking every day. She had adopted a daughter and that daughter had a baby. I have a great grandson, beautiful baby you ever saw in your life. I love him so much. He's 4 months old and I can see a sign of brilliance in him as he says, cool, cool, cool. That's about all he can say. But I'm so grateful. It's life back in the family again. My son that was taken away from me is back in my life again. My journey has been one of great pain, but more joy. I listen to people in these rooms who have forced me to get out of myself on a daily basis. And sometimes I listen to them sharing their story and I want to say, oh, but let me tell you mine. And then I say, no, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Listen to their story. And at the end of it, I'll find that my story is right in the middle of theirs. And they've grown and they're growing and I'm growing and I'm changing and we're growing. We're here on a Sunday morning. Looking at people from all over the world. And we're all here because someone in our life had a problem with alcohol. And all of us at some point in our life have thrown up our hands and said, it's more than I can handle. But somehow in our life, we found a solution to the problem. And the problem isn't them, the problem is us and our inability to let go and trust God and be willing to follow a path that can bring us joy. Sometimes in my life, I've got great joy out of self-pity. I've got great joy out of being a martyr. I've got great joy out of those things. And I had to work this program to say, honey, there's no joy in that. It's misery. Come out of yourself, all of us, and follow the path that can give us hope. In the midst of shadows, you can have hope. You know, I'm grateful that I'm here this morning. And I'm grateful to Yvonne for remembering an old lady. Because in my body, I'm old, but in my mind, I still think I'm young. I still think I'm filled with some kind of spirit that can give hope to people. And I'm grateful that you all are here. And I can look at your faces. And I can see the love of God in you. And I thank you and thank you and thank you. What I found in these rooms, the great is God's faithfulness. Morning, my morning, new mercies I see. All I have needed, God's hand has provided. Great is God's faithfulness to me and to you. Thank you.